Well, equity markets seem to be enjoying the prospect that central banks might not be cutting now, but they are getting close. Although one central bank did cut rates today, and it wasn't the Bank of England, but the hawks there have got into line. We'll talk about Australia's employment numbers as well yesterday. Too strong for the RBA, and New Zealand's GDP too weak for the RBNZ. It's Friday, the 22nd of March, 2024. It's the Morning Call from NAB. Good morning. Well, US equities climbing higher today. The Dow is up 0.7% at close, up 0.3% for the S&P to a new record high. The Nasdaq is up 0.2%, but Apple shares down 4% after the US Justice Department filed a lawsuit against them for restricting competition by stopping rivals from offering services on their operating system and from stopping allowing competing operating systems on their iPhones. Can you imagine that? In Europe, the Euro Stoxx 50 closed up 1%. The FTSE 100 is up 1.9% after a bit of an optimistic beat from the Bank of England. The US dollar is up 0.6% this morning, just above 104 on the DXY. The euro is down by the same amount, down 0.6%. The Aussie rose after yesterday's employment numbers, but now it's down 0.25%, below 65.7 US cents. The pound is down 1% after the Bank of England. And no massive moves in bonds. 10-year treasuries are flat. UK 10-year gilts are down 2 basis points. German 10-year bunds down 3. Australian 10-year yields were up 4 basis points yesterday to 4.09% today on futures, 3 basis points higher than that. And oil today, 0.3% off Brent and WTI. So let's kick off with the Bank of England, with NAB's Gavin Friend in London. So from what I've seen from Andrew Bailey, I mean, he was sounding upbeat, but also still warning about services inflation, saying that's still high. But could we actually be heading for a June cut? And, you know, and how many cuts this year would that mean?
Well, as you know, Phil, that at NAB, we haven't been going for a June cut since last October. We've had an August cut, and we maintain that view. But we've also said that the risks for the Bank of England are clearly skewed towards June. So what we heard in this week's policy, this meeting this week was never going to be anything other than a holding action, really, because we had in the February meeting new CPI forecasts, which, you know, finally the bank has relented to the idea that CPI is going to be coming down to 2% or below 1.9% in the second quarter of this year. And as we've been saying for some time now, you know, the base effects are going to, over the next few months, are going to kick in. We're currently at 3.4%. That was down from 4% in numbers released earlier this week. And we're going to go, you know, suitably below 2% in the next few months.
And that's why.
And the bank seems to be acknowledging
that. At least nobody voted for a hike this time. You know, we've still got one vote for a cut, but Catherine Mann and Jonathan Haskell, who were the hawks last time, they've been bought into line.
Yes, and you know, we had suggested that would be the case because, you know, inflation is falling too fast. I think generally it's fair to say that the market at large hadn't forecast that. And I think so that's you talked about the pound coming down. That's one of those things that surprised a few people. But there were some other developments as well. If you look at the minutes, so all we got this week was the minutes and the statement. There's no new forecasts and things. But in those minutes, a couple of lines, they're now saying that the restrictive stance of policy is weighing on activity in the real economy, and it's leading to looser labour market conditions and is bearing down on inflation. Pressures. That's a new few lines there. And then also they added a sentence which says the committee recognised that the stance of monetary policy could remain restrictive even if the bank rate were to be reduced, given it's starting at an already restrictive level. Now, that's not revelationary, and other central banks are talking about this, the idea that, you know, policy has reached restrictive or very restrictive levels. You know, at a number of central banks, it's gone up very quickly, despite the easing of conditions, and that central banks can cut a couple of times, maybe three times. You know, that's up for debate, and still have policy restrictive. You know, it's the whole debate about, well, where's the neutral now? They're not going to want to change policy much. You know, maybe neutral at some point down the road, but we're not there yet.
Yeah.
And that's the debate that we're having.
We've got a bit of time for that, haven't we?
We do have a bit of time for that. And I think, you know, for the Bank of England, the next thing we're going to be focused on is the May meeting. We'll get some new forecasts then, and they should come on the back of a couple of, you know, lower prints and CPI. That'll give the MPC a little bit more confidence that they're going in the right direction, and that maybe, you know, maybe that they might be more convinced that inflation will stay at these kinds of levels. That's why I'm saying, you know, the market is not yet priced at June. We've talked about June for other central banks, and that's still very much the case. But for the Bank of England, the risks are for June. Still, when we think about core inflation, you know, it's above 4. Services inflation is just, you know, is still close to 6%. And we know that those things are going to lag. You know, that's to your point, Andrew Bailey today, talking about we don't have to wait for these kinds of things to get to target, but we need to have the confidence that they're moving in the right direction. That's going to take them, I think, you know, just a few more months to get there. So on balance, we're still happy with the call that the bank won't move until August. We'll see how we go, whether we need to move that to June at some point, you know, the next
month or so.
Few months.
Okay, now one bank has cut rates, so it can be done. The Swiss National Bank, I mean, there wasn't a massive market response, but I think it caught people a bit unaware, didn't it?
Well, it did. I mean, it's something that we'd flagged up in our What to Watch last week, which, you know, I think you and I talked about this last time around, which was, it's a different situation for Switzerland. Inflation is at 1.2%. It only went up to about 3.5%. So it didn't rise to the sort of 9% average that we saw, you know, for most economies around the world, in the advanced world anyway. And you know, the economy has slowed. It has recently warned that it's reversed its policy of wanting to bear down on inflation, you know, sometimes using the exchange rate. None of that applies anymore. Therefore, the risks to the SNB going sooner were pretty low. And, you know, it could have got caught right behind. It doesn't want to see the Swiss franc rise. It only meets 4 times a year. And so there was about 7 basis points priced into the move today before they did it. It was no surprise to us, as I say. And I think, a positive development for them. And of course, it reverberates through markets. You know, we started this week with the Bank of Japan making that big instrumental move, even though it was only small, but it was a historic move for the first rise in 17 years. Then we end the week with the SNB actually cutting rates. And, you know, it's something we've been talking about with this yen Swiss move, which has been at, you know, sort of long-term lows, and that can turn around now. But it sets the scene, really, the SNB, for other central banks that are in a less favourable position. But nonetheless, as we heard from Jay Powell yesterday, there is a Fed chairman that wants to ease. You know, he's got higher growth forecasts. He's got slightly higher core PCE forecasts. You know, he's coming off the back of a couple of high inflation prints, and yet he's looking through them, giving it the benefit of the doubt, still data dependent, but telling us that, you know, a policy easing is coming. And it tells you that the Fed is more prepared to, you know, to react to a weaker economy rather than, you know, stronger growth. And I guess, in a way, that, to be fair to him, you know, that's when inflation comes down from where it's been to where it is now, you know, the Fed can afford to look more closely at its dual mandate rather than just the inflation side aspect of that, you know. And so,
right, well, let's have a look at some of the data that we have been getting, because, well, we'll get UK retail sales today, so that'll show us the strength or otherwise of the UK economy. The UK services PMI is down a bit, we saw yesterday, but still up at 53.4. So that is better than, for example, Germany, which is at 49.8. So in contraction, and 51.1 for the whole of the euro area. So actually, UK services, and, you know, perhaps that's why it's a concern, though. Maybe they're too strong. But manufacturing has climbed a little, only just, but it's just in contraction territory, 49.9.
Yeah, I mean, look at these.
That's up from 47.5. So that's quite encouraging,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, big picture, Phil, we're not really changing anything here in terms of, from the UK, we've had that, you know, all conquering service sector PMI up well above 50 for several months now. It's you know, between 53 and 54. It's not really going anywhere. It's you know, consistent with growth of 0.2, 0.3 a quarter, you know, rather than the technical recession that we saw at the back end of 2023. The manufacturing sector being in contraction, that's the same everywhere. So that, you know, it's getting less weak, but it's still in contraction. The services PMIs that you talked about in Europe and Germany, look, you know, we saw last month this thing for the Eurozone as a whole, it went from 48 and change to above 50.2. It's coming at 51.5 this time, so it's continuing to go. There's a bit of angst around Germany and France. They're a bit volatile, but even Germany improved to 49.9, so it's almost at the 50 break even. This is all part of that good news story that as we look down the road further through 2024, we shouldn't be thinking about, you know, a UK or a European economy that's flatlining, which is what the GDP data, the lagging GDP data, is telling us at the moment. But we should be thinking about growing at 0.2 or 0.3 a quarter as inflation comes down, as wages hold up a bit and thereby real incomes improve a bit, as energy prices come down a little bit. You know, we're not shooting the lights out, but it's not as bleak as it has been. And the trajectory is more positive. And, you know, going back to bringing it back to central banks, we're into this idea of rate cuts, easier policy in the next few months, and all this is going to help.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we get German IFO, of course, later on today as well. So that hopefully will show, I mean, current conditions and expectations basically fell in the middle of last year. So, you know, from what you're saying, hopefully they're going to pick up. Let's look at the Australian employment numbers yesterday. Not that helpful, were they? We had a fall in the unemployment rate down to 3.7%. But we've talked about that. I mean, February is the month that counts. I mean, there still have been people delaying starting work from January. So, and, you know, because the January holiday period is obviously, it's going back to the way it used to be within Australia, so maybe these are just a little bit extraordinary, these numbers. But I mean, it paints a picture which is very different to the unemployment rate which is sitting in the RBA's statement of monetary policy forecast.
It does, and Mike, you know, hats off to my colleague Tapperson Taylor, who've been warning for the last couple of months not to draw too firm conclusions from the previous two labour market numbers, where, as you say, we saw a flat number last month and a fall in December. The January number has been revised slightly higher anyway. You know, the reason for that, as you say, is that those weaker numbers reflected, you know, a large number of people who had a job or a position that they were waiting to start that hadn't, and that, you know, weren't included in the data, and that all this is tied up to the pandemic era sort of behaviour by firms related to things like holiday shutdowns and sort of mandated annual leave and that kind of thing. So this week's data supports our view that the labour market, you know, hasn't been cooling as much as the prior two labour market reports had suggested. They even even suggest that there's less underlying easing in the labour market than we and the RBA had thought. There's, to your point about the RBA's February SOMP, which had penciled in an unemployment rate of 4.2 average for Q2 this year. I mean, that's looking like a bit of a stretch now. We'll see. But for the RBA, Governor Bullock, you know, did this week reference the tick up in the jobless rate as one of the reasons why, you know, the RBA is being cautious. Of course, you know, there are other reasons, not least the absence of household consumption in Q4 GDP, and in fact for the whole of 2023. You know, and let's remember, this accounts for some 50% of economic growth. But, you know, as we've said, you know, you look ahead in 2024, and inflation will drop back like it will be in Europe and the UK. Inflation will drop back further, which will mean, you know, for a period, real incomes will rise as wages lag. You know, there's also tax cuts coming, and so all of these things point to a slightly better economic growth as they go through the year, and the RBA, you know, needs to continue probably along its path that it's doing at the moment.
But it's going to take time. And yet, you know, if we look at New Zealand, the opposite is true, isn't it? So the GDP numbers yesterday confirmed 5 quarters of falling GDP per capita. Hard to imagine that you'd keep rates up as the economy seems to be cooling quite that much. I mean, we saw quite a move in 2-year yields after we saw those numbers come out yesterday.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, anything, you know, your reference to per capita is interesting, because New Zealand's had this 3% rise in population through last year, and so anything on a per capita basis is going to look pretty miserable. So the global GDP, I think, was, you know, to your point, it's shaded under what the RBNZ you know, had expected. And so markets reacted by bringing forward really sort of rate cut time, and potentially, you know, we might expect the RBNZ to shift, you know, from the first half of 2025 to later this year. But I mean, we shouldn't get carried away, right? Private consumption was pretty good actually in Q4. It was up 0.5 of a percentage point. But there were, And that was probably, you know, well above expected, which was nearly 0.5% in you know, negative terms. But there were significant downward revisions to prior or bank numbers. And so overall, the things evened out. So there's a lot of churn. There's a lot of volatility in these numbers. And so I think the RBNZ will want to, you know, take a bit more data before it.
Yeah. That old line. Absolutely. Wait for the data. Okay. Yeah. The Philly Fed Manufacturing Index, that was a pretty mixed picture, wasn't it? Down a little in terms of general activity, but new orders are positive. They weren't last time. Shipments have picked up a little bit. Prices have moved lower. So largely good news there.
I thought actually the detail was much better than the headline, pretty much all the way through.
Yeah. And then today, well, we started the week with Japan. We get the inflation rate for February. The core rate was 2%. It's expected to pick up, hence perhaps the Boj moves early in the week, and New Zealand's balance of trade, Canada's retail numbers, and that is about it. It's been a busy week.
It has indeed.
We'll catch you soon. Thanks, Gavin.
But we're moving. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Phil.
And we're not quite finished for the week. On the weekend edition, Australia's education sector, what it means for the economy and some of the wins and some of the challenges right now. I talked to NAB's Taylor Nugent and the AFR's Julie Hare.
Yeah, and they're putting a lot more scrutiny over visa applications. So as I said at the beginning, visa application rejection rates are at the highest on record across all sectors. Some universities are deeply, deeply worried. The vocational sector is deeply worried.
But it's not all bad news. There has been a big bounce back since COVID, more than just a bounce back, in fact, she reckons. So that is online this afternoon from wherever you pick this edition of the podcast up. Join us for that. And then, of course, we're back again on Monday morning as well. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. See you soon.